Good morning, everyone. My name is Mary. I am an alcoholic. And it's so great to be with you this morning. We're going to kick off with step 11. And so when I was praying, I felt the need to, for anyone that may not be as versed with it, I'm going to read it to you because it's a beautiful, beautiful step. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And so I remember when I got to this place after making my amends and preparing for the latter steps, and for my sponsor, I had to meet a criteria of making at least 3 amends before I could speak. And, she was very structured in that I couldn't continue on, until I met a certain goal or, So when I began to read through step 11, we kind of reviewed the reading, and then we began to discuss where I was when I first came in and my relationship with God. And sought, if you look it up, it's to seek. It's an action word. It's continuous. It's fluid. And so we began to look at many ways that I could begin to increase my understanding and open up that awareness because, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with a kind of a closed, I grew up in a closed system. And so I had some very definitive ideas about God and, and so my idea of the California Jesus has just, taken a whole new perspective, which is wonderful. And he's still very present in my life. And I shared with you yesterday that I had been exposed to Steel on Steel. It's a where iron sharpens iron. So we have a group of women that do begin an accountability, and how we can go from just our normal 10th step into something that is even more. It's greater. It's bigger because. As I shared when I first came in, there was some really rooted, disordered thinking when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. In addition to that, there were a lot of wounds that were there. And, it was a process. So after reading my fifth step in 2001 and doing the St. Francis prayer and then being exposed to some books, I remember my sponsor gave me a book called The Samaritan's Purse. In our first early readings, it talks about, we have to be the good Samaritan all the time. It's not just an occasional thing when it's convenient to be available to those in AA or into whoever God brings into your arena. And so I began to understand through Franklin Graham's book on what the Samaritan's Purse is. And it was a group of people, doctors and others, that would come at a time of crisis and they would provide services. And it's just like the Good Samaritan who didn't even know the person that we read about in that story and provided care. So how do I go about providing care without, crossing that line of codependency? And I learned a lot about who I was by reading some of these books because I could identify. And how do you just love the way God wants you to love for a period of time? Because sometimes people come in and out of your life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And how do you not become invested in their outcome? How does it not become your outcome? So, again, I began to have a relationship with a woman. Her name is Robin, and we began to read some books. And we read The Purpose-Driven Life, which began to open up a whole new, you know, set of ideas about God and about community and about how I can be of service. And that whole mindset. So we have the doctor's opinion talking about altruistic behavior and altruism, and then this whole idea of service and the concept of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and how do I begin to surrender, and how do you work together as a team, and how do you, you know, we all have gifts and talents, and praying for the knowledge of His will. So all of this began, and it was incredible. You know, I was just so ripe after all the work I had done, and you know, continuing to practice, letting go of my fears of other people's opinions, and all of that. And like I said, God always put a person, a book, or both into my arena. And today, you know, when I was preparing and praying, you know, because there's so many, you know, 18 years is a long time and a lot of books and a lot of people. And so there's a couple that I'd like to share, a couple of things to really highlight how God has worked. So I left my full-time job at Catholic Charities in July of 2017. And I felt God had called me to begin to work on another project. And I'm not very savvy on the computer, right? So I had a website, and so I thought I would clear it. And instead of clearing this particular website, it sent out emails to all of them, right? And in one of those emails, a woman named Susan emailed me back, and she happened to contact me maybe 2015 or 16, asking if I would be a therapist on a retreat. It was a post-abortive retreat called Rachel's Vineyard. And I said to her, well, how much does it pay? And she said, oh, no, it's volunteer. And I had volunteerism up to here. My husband he said, you need to cap it on the volunteerism, right? So I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm tapped out on the volunteer. And but she called me. She didn't email me back. She called me. She said, Mary, I just got your email. Are you available? And I said, well, Susan, actually I am. And she said, this is fantastic because we're having a retreat, and I'd like for you to, you have to go on the retreat in order to become familiar with the format, and then you'll be able to serve with us. And we're so excited. And so it was 2 weeks away. I didn't even have time to think. So I contacted the therapist that was going to be running it, and she said, oh, yeah, we have room, blah, blah, blah. So she sent me an information assessment, and I filled it out and faxed it over, and off I went. Now, I'm thinking in the mindset is I am going to learn how to be the therapist on the next retreat. And God had another plan, because as I shared with you, you know, I had in high school an abortion. And I had no idea about Teresa Burke and the book that this retreat was based on. And it was called Forbidden Grief. And so it's so interesting. If I had known what I know now, I may not have gone to on the retreat, right? But because God knew where I was, and He knew how much work I needed to do around this area, I went in cold. And I was met with so much love. Love that I only experienced in AA. And so we went in, and the basis of it is to begin to learn about who we were and how we ended up in a position where we thought it was a good idea to use abortion as a solution to a problem. And but it wasn't just that. It was about, on Saturday, we had an opportunity to review our entire childhood. And I got to see. And I remember being at one of the Drop the Rock meetings with my AA girls, and I said to them, I don't understand how I could have walked through life so thoughtlessly. You know, there was just no thought in so many of my decisions. It was as if there was no filter. And while I was on that retreat, it became clearer of what happens to children that are invalidated and abused. And the series of sexual abuse, I never discussed with anyone. I mean, I wrote about it in my resentments, but it was never unpacked. And here was a group of men and women who shared their experience of going through the weekend. Because it's not just women, but it's fathers too. And I got to hear how fathers suffer as well, right? And the weekend was so impactful that I was able to share with, I had shared that with my husband, but I was able to share it with my children when I got home. And there's freedom, because that was the last vestige of secrets that I had held on to. And God didn't want me holding on to secrets. He wanted me to be clean and clear. And in order to do that, he presented it. But he didn't present it way back, you know, in the early years. He presented it when I was ready. And it took what it took. It took every book. It took every person. It took every incident. It took everything in order for me to become open to having that kind of healing. And I heard in a meeting that God does spiritual surgery. And that's exactly what happened to me that day, that weekend. It was spiritual surgery. And because I never spoke about this, and I never had the freedom to speak about it, because it was a secret and I was chock full of shame. And I share it today because this is what God has given me. He's given me the opportunity to let go and let him be the victor, right? And the healing, because I absolutely believe that I serve a God who is chock full of mercy and so full of grace. And if he can forgive me, then I can forgive myself. And I had an opportunity to name that child and to become, connected in a way that was never even, an idea. So it was incredible. And then there's one more thing. So it doesn't stop. So after that, I became involved in this project that God gave me. I left my full-time job, started my little private practice, and God had a plan. And so the plan was to start a nonprofit mental health and wellness center in Haverhill, Massachusetts. And so I began to get all the information, so the first year out, I had all the pieces, and now I needed to find a space. And then he found a space, but it was met with resistance, right? And I'm always thinking, if it's God's will, it should be seamless, you know? Boom. And but how do you learn about your character? How do you learn about things that aren't healed and aren't that you need more of the substance that makes you who you are, you know? So he puts obstacles, you know, like an obstacle course. And so I am a wonderful therapist. I know that role well. I was trained well. A businesswoman, not so much. Not so much. I don't have that business thought. Now, my husband is a great businessman, but he wasn't really all that warm and kind and forthcoming. He was kind of like business. And so I resisted his help. And I just kept coming up against these obstacles. And then God put a person in front of me and said, hey, you know, I've been going to this 12-step group called Adult Children of Alcoholics. And I remember that I had gone there years before, had done the yellow workbook, and I figured I had cleared all that stuff up. But there was things that were triggering me. And when you grow up in an alcoholic home, there are things and triggers and implicit memory formation in your muscles and in your... It all needed to be looked at. And so I began going. And what happened was, every week we would be reading out of this red book, and it was parallel to what I was going through with this resistance in the business world. And so I learned about this whole idea of God reparenting you. Imagine that. God reparenting. So I said, you know what, God, I need help. I don't have this part of my formation, and I don't know how to navigate it without getting all emotional and feeling stupid and feeling inferior. And so he sent me this wonderful lawyer, and the lawyer said to me, Mary, this is business. Why are you getting emotional? I was able to receive that. I said, Bob, that's brilliant. I mean, that was worth $1,000. And I think that's what he charged me. But he said, business is not personal. There's no reason to get emotional. And I went back to my group, and I said, I learned my first thing. Business isn't personal. So one thing after another, and God began to reparent. And that could not happen had I not gone through all the other pieces. And this was a piece of knowledge to do God's will. And I believe that God has a purpose and a plan for me. And he needed for me to navigate in my thinking a way to operate, because I'm going into another realm, a business realm. And I can take all the principles I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and apply them without being emotional. Couldn't have done it. I didn't learn that in this 12-step program, but I learned it in another one. And I'm able to share that with you. And it's just incredible. And so what's happening is that I am able to continue to, understand more and more how God wants to integrate and influence every arena that I happen to walk in. And so, and it doesn't end there. There are things in my lives with my children. There's trauma that happened, and I'm open because God sends me a person that has a similar experience. There are things that happen in, my work environment, and I have no idea how to handle it. And I just say to my daddy God, I need help, and he sends me. Like, so this incredible trust that I will be taken care of. So my childhood, where I wasn't protected, right, or taken care of, so that was my perception. So here I am now, 62, and I'm able to heal what happened then in this present moment. And that is my experience, by opening myself up to what God can do. Because God's my time is linear, right? I have 24 hours, and I think in those terms, 8 hours to work, 8 hours to sleep, 8 hours to do everything else. But that's not how God looks at time. And so the time period of my childhood all the way to present day, the healing has just begun to do this circular thing. And so I'm able to look at my childhood as absolutely historical. I mean, it happened. But that charge, that piece of emotional triggering has gone away. It's not completely diminished, because if I'm triggered in the present day, that's something that is implicit that needs to be addressed. And God sent me a person to help me to resolve that. And so my 11th step continues, and I of course have my ritual where I get up at 5 and I have my prayers, and one sweet thing that my husband and I do. So he has dry eye. And so he gets up a few minutes after me, and he has this beanbag eye thing. And he heats it up, and he puts it on his eyes, and he sits for 7 minutes and lets it, you know, cultivate some new tears. And I read to him. And the book we're reading is from Oswald Chambers, My Utmost for His Highest. And so I read the day, and then we talk about it, because he has his beautiful mind and his beautiful brain, and it's completely different than mine. So he has his spirituality, and I get to hear how he interprets what Oswald's saying, and then I'll share mine, and he goes, I don't know how you got that, but you know. and then I ask him, how can I pray for you for the day? And then when we meet up at the end of the day, I say, well, how did it go? And this is the time I prayed for you. And you know, so the beauty of my 11th step and the cultivation of God in all my walks of life has it continues to grow. And I'm able to do some things before I go to work. I go to Holy Mass every day. And that wasn't always. You know, it was something that, it was an invitation. And I get to do that. And then there are other things throughout the day that I get to do. I get to pause and to pray throughout the day for particular reasons. And I have a spiritual director, and I've had several, because there are seasons, you know, and certain people can give you certain information and certain guidance. So I've had several. And the spiritual director I currently have is just an incredible, incredible person. And I have learned so much. And we both know when it'll be a time to move on. And so my step 11 continues to move fluidly. And so very grateful to this part of the process. And I look forward to the next person that shows up in my life, or the next book. And that's my experience. Thank you.
All right, good morning. My name is George again, and I'm still an alcoholic. And coming down the home stretch here, this is step 11. And again, my first experience with this reading was my sponsor said, like American Express, you don't leave home without it. So I read page 83 through 88 every day when I was writing my fourth step. My sponsor, at the time, I had two careers. One was 30 years in the restaurant business, and then 20 years as a manufacturer's rep. And being a manufacturer's rep, I worked for 8 different companies at one time. And my sponsor would say to me when we were talking about prayer and meditation, he says, how many times do you communicate with your employers? You got 8 employers you work for? And I said, oh, man, it's just emails and conference calls and you know, sales managers' visits and text messages and spreadsheets. And he says, well, now you have a new employer. And he says, we want you to communicate with that employer equally as well. So now we're talking about prayer and meditation. I used to think that prayer was some old man or some old lady's idle wish. But I think now, properly understood and applied, I think it's the most powerful force in the universe. There's an ancient text that says, anything you ask for, I will do for you. Now, obviously, we're not talking about lottery tickets and things like that, but anything that you ask for, I will do for you. And as Mary said, that time, God is not into time. I don't think God wears a Rolex. But anything that I think that I've prayed that has been good for me or the good for the people around me, those prayers eventually get answered. You know, not to get into quantum physics, but science has proven that we're 99.9.9% empty. So what is the emptiness? Well, it's energy. And that energy, a prayer, is a request out into that energy field. I don't know how it works, but it works. And I've seen plenty of examples of it in my life, that prayer has been the divining thing that has happened. And meditation also... I think the best definition I've heard of it is what the Buddhists say, that the mind is like a great horse, that you always want to take care of it, but you just don't let it run around the countryside. And that when we meditate, it's like they were talking yesterday at that great meditation that it's like developing a muscle. That I think that when we meditate, we strengthen the mind so the tail is not wagging the dog. And I find that when I meditate regularly and have been for a while, every morning for about 15 minutes. And I find that I'm much more settled down during the course of the day. It says we become much more efficient. And I really believe that meditation is a direct link to being efficient. Because before, it was helter-skelter, you know, like I made a metaphor about spinning plates. You know, I was like the guy on the Ed Sullivan Show. So now I try to just spin one or two plates at a time. And I think meditation has been a huge help in doing that. My mind settles down. I'm not all over the place. And I really believe that that is just like going to the gym to develop a muscle, that meditation is developing the mind to become a servant of the soul, if you will. The meat of this particular step is on page 86. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Where have we been resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Do we owe an apology? What could we have done better? I used to say, what does this have to do with me not drinking? And I would say, absolutely nothing. But yet it has absolutely everything to do with me not drinking. Because we discover early on that alcohol is but a symptom. And now we're going to get down to causes and conditions. And I thought alcohol was always the problem. For the first 3 years at Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought alcohol was the problem. It's not the problem. It's the thinking that precedes the drinkings that's the problem. And it's this particular step that gives me an opportunity to examine my day to make sure that I'm not going down that road where a drink looks like the solution. I have a 11-step review that I used to use every day for many, many, many 24 hours. I made a few copies before I came here. And if you've done this work, this would make sense to you. If you haven't, this might not make sense to you. But I have on the top of this, love and tolerance of others. I write down the people that I've expressed love to. I list the people that I might have any significant contact with. I check to see if I have any worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. So some of these questions I put onto this piece of paper. And at the end of the night, I'm not doing it every night, but for many years I did. I don't do it at bedside, but when I'm in for the day, I would take one of these sheets of paper, and it would take me 2 or 3 minutes to go through this. And it was a nice way to, like, at the game is over for the day. I'm looking at the game film, and after this exercise, I would say my prayers. I would ask forgiveness. And when I went to bed and woke up, man, my head was clear. So I made about 10 copies. If somebody would like one, you're more than welcome to take one. There's other helpful books also, as you had mentioned. One of my favorites was Emmett Fox. He had a big influence on Bill Wilson. Emmett Fox's secretary, her son was an alcoholic, and he had met Bill Wilson at a meeting and then told Emmett Fox's secretary, in other words, Emmett Fox was the writer, he had a secretary whose son was an alcoholic. And that's how Bill Wilson and Emmett Fox made the connection. Anyway, I was taught that God was, like, again, I mentioned it a few times before, this bearded figure with a robe, and, you know, and there was never any union, it was always duality. But Emmett Fox really opened my eyes and my heart to the fact that this divine presence lives within all of us. So I'll always be grateful to Emmett Fox. And another great writer that I like is Og Mandino. And I think, I said before that my spiritual awakening was love, and there's an ancient text that says God is love, so I don't think I'm too far off. But Og Mandino gave me and I've done this for a long, long time, and many times while I've been here, but Og Mandino suggests that when you meet someone, that you say to them under your breath, I love you. And when you're able to do that, your heart opens, and they cannot help but feel that. So I don't do it with every person I meet because I don't think of it because they're talking and I'm talking. But I do say I love you to a few people every day. They're my family members and whatever. But I find that if I meet somebody and as they're introducing themselves, I try to have the presence of mind to say under my breath that I love you, and it opens my heart, and they can't help but feel that energy. So just something you might want to try. And that's, you know, this is meditation for me. I had a knee replacement. I can't cross my legs. Kneeling down, I can still do that. But I don't really think that God cares whether I'm facing north, east, south, or west, where I'm sitting, whether I'm standing, laying down. But as long as the intention is there, and, you know, you can go to Barnes & Noble and see a wall of techniques on how to meditate and how to pray. And I think there's an ancient text that simply says it best, be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. And when I meditate, that's the attitude that I try to have, just to be still. My mind, thoughts come through, I just don't lock onto them. I just let them, like watching an aquarium, like watching a fish swim by, I don't lock onto it, I just let it be. But it's a great tool. It's been a big help to me in a lot of ways. I become a better listener because of meditation. I don't have to dominate the conversation anymore. And I've really seen it in my job. I try to do one thing at a time, and I try to do it exceptionally well. And it's this step that has helped me stay focused. And that's my experience with step 11.
Thank you.